Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Our guest today is Joe Bannister. Many of you will recognize his name. Joe was a former IRS agent who had the audacity. He'd been there for 9 years. He was special agent for the IRS, and after somewhere in the neighborhood of 7, 8, 9 years, he began to ask questions. He began to look at some of the arguments, the tax arguments that were advanced by the people he was helping to arrest or, and or investigate and or prosecute. And he asked his superiors, well, these guys are claiming where is the law that makes them liable to pay income tax? And eventually he persisted in seeking that law, as I understand it, and Joe will correct me if I'm mistaken about this, he persisted in seeking to understand that law, and he was eventually invited to resign from the Internal Revenue Service. They didn't want to tell him where the law was, and they didn't want him to keep asking questions, and he couldn't stop. And he has gone through an interesting ordeal as a result. Here we are 14 years later. And I would imagine he's still on the IRS radar. We'll talk to Joe Bannister in just a moment. First, we'll do the market reports. Gold is down $6.90 an ounce today to $1,385.60 an ounce. Silver is off 20 cents to $21.98 an ounce. Platinum is down 12 to $1,439. Palladium is off 17 to $718 per ounce. In the equities markets, Dow Jones is up 110 points to 15,180. NASDAQ is up 27 points to 3,451. New York Stock Exchange is up 74 points to 9,338. U.S. dollar index is down 0.04 to 80.58, and crude oil is down 1 cent to $97.84 per barrel. It's not too much change, not too much up, not too much down, nothing dramatic happening today in the markets. Let's get on to Joe Bannister. Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Very good, Al. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you here, Joe. I haven't talked to you directly, I'd say, in probably 10 years. I'm not sure if that's true or false, but 8, 10 years?
Probably about that long. Yes,
I think it's about that long. Well, let's start. You can correct me. You heard the introduction. And if I made any serious errors in the introduction, why don't you correct those and give people a quick idea of what you were doing as an IRS agent, how you got crosswise, and what happened after that.
Well, thank you. Yes, I'd say your mini appraisal there was very accurate. I graduated from college way back in 1986, and I spent a number of years in the private sector. And I didn't realize until I was knee-deep in the private sector that there's no way I could stay enthused about being an accountant and a CPA in the private sector for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And so I needed to search out some more excitement. And so I decided to look into careers in law enforcement. And
is this one of those illustrations to be careful what you ask for? Might get it. Did you get enough excitement before this was done?
Yeah, be careful what you pray for, because that's how it turned out. But anyway, I focused on the federal law enforcement because of my background as a CPA at the time, and chose the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, and the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. I probably wouldn't have even known about that IRS law enforcement agency had it not been for a family friend who ended up years later actually becoming my boss at the IRS. He suggested that I apply to both the FBI and the IRS, which I did back in the early 90s. And back then, there was when Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House, there was a hiring freeze. And that, even though I had passed all of the hurdles for the FBI when I applied there, they couldn't get the actual authority to hire me. So I really was qualified, and I was literally waiting to get on a plane to Quantico, Virginia, to become an FBI special agent. But this hiring freeze prevented that from happening. Meanwhile, the IRS Criminal Investigation Division, or CID, I had also applied there, and they contacted me while I was waiting for the FBI application. And, you know, the long and short of it was, better take the federal law enforcement job that's open rather than waiting around for the one that's not. So I went ahead and accepted the offer to become a special agent with the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. And for those that don't know, you know, there's, as they call them, the alphabet soup federal agencies, the IRS has a contingency of special agents, and they, at least as far as the government's viewpoint, they're every bit as much federal criminal investigators. The it's called a GS 1811 series, and so your FBI special agents, Secret Service special agents, ICE special agents, and IRS special agents all are this GS 1811 series. So basically, the idea grew on me. I was really had my heart set on being an FBI special agent, but they couldn't hire me because of the hiring freeze. So I went ahead and accepted the offer with the IRS. And in November of 1993, I was sworn in as an IRS special agent in the San Francisco post of duty. And within about 6 months, I was transferred 50 miles to the south to San Jose, California, which was my hometown. And so I really expected to spend a full 20-year law enforcement career with the IRS. But about 3 years into my 5.5 years there at the agency, I was listening to a talk radio show where the topic of income taxation and the monetary system and those kinds of topics were being discussed. And a lady named D.V. Kidd was mm-hmm. a guest back there in December of 1996. And she was making these, what at the time I thought were pretty wild claims about the federal income tax being voluntary in the sense that there was no mandate, you know, in the federal law that required most Americans to file and pay. And the primary reason for that is because they weren't liable for the tax. And so I normally would have discounted or just not even paid any attention to such talk. But she was saying these things on a talk radio show hosted by a guy who was always very trustworthy and everything checked out that he had said in the past. So he had developed a, you know, basically a track record with me of trust. And yet he had this lady talking about the income tax in a manner that was completely contrary to everything that I knew or believed. And so I basically had to set out on a journey to resolve that conflict. to determine whether what she was saying about the income tax was true or whether I was not a very good judge of character and this talk show host, Jeff Metcalf, was, you know, having kooky guests on his show. And that's what started my journey back in 1997. And basically for a two-year period, while I still served every day as a special agent, on evenings and weekends, I would dig in and research and investigate these claims that D.B. Kidd made on the radio that day, plus related issues relating to the income tax.
Now, you host your own radio program today on Saturdays. I think it's called Freedom Above Fortune.
Actually, I'm in transition on LibertyWorks Radio Network. I've got a show, but also on Unbound Radio.
Okay.
And they, I just had my first debut show on that network Saturday, just 2 days ago.
Are you at all inspired by D.V. Kidd's performance back in 1996? The point being that you get up on these radio programs, and you never know who you are going to influence. And things can happen that you can't anticipate. You do a radio program just like you're doing one today. Who knows who you're going to reach, and who knows who else is going to embark on a journey similar to your own that may have some significant effect. Go ahead.
I'm so glad that you brought that up. I think it's an excellent point, and it, you know, might as well deal with it right out of the gates. D.V. Kidd, you know, has spent thousands of hours on the radio unpaid because she cares about these issues. And she had no idea that when she did that radio show back in December of 96, that an IRS criminal investigator would be listening and would have, you know, want to follow up on these, what, you know, thought to be outlandish claims. And so she had no idea and didn't find out until probably 3 to 6 months after she did the show when I contacted her and said, look, I'm really trying to get to the bottom of this, and it's, there's no strings attached. I'm not trying to investigate you. This is, you know, on my own time, and I'm just trying to get to the truth here because I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And I take my oath very seriously, obviously, because it's to God. And I want to get to the bottom of this. And so she was amazed. You make an excellent point. You never know who's going to be listening. And you think to yourself, oh, you know, I got to do just a little more activism and do a little more of this stuff. And, you know, I'm not getting anything in return. But, you know, the Lord's up there. Providence is working all the time, and it is amazing how things come together.
I agree with that 100%. I guarantee you my life has been something entirely different than I would ever have expected, and I know it's because the good Lord moves you in particular directions. I'm curious, was your faith strong to the same degree when you, in 1996, was your faith comparable to your faith today, or have you come to understand the good Lord's hand in your life to a much greater and unexpected degree since you began to confront your employer, the IRS?
Oh, definitely the latter rather than the former. You know, I believe that I had faith, or I knew I had faith at that time, but it, what's really amazing is when your faith is tested, then you realize how much stronger your faith can become, and it almost gives you a track record to realize that no matter where you are in that faith journey, there's still a lot more to come.
And I agree. I follow that absolutely. I understand. I've had a similar experience. I thought my faith was strong when I got into this back in 1990, but it was nothing compared to what it eventually evolved into, and it was by means of serious testing. It's not just something where, for me, that you just get down on your knees and you say your prayers and you become more faithful. You get a greater. You go through the fire. Now, you've gone through the fire of being, the IRS eventually took you to court and threatened you with criminal prosecution, if I understand correctly, and you were risking a number of years. Do I recall 16 years potentially? In prison?
Yes, it was quite an ordeal. I guess technically, you know, there's a statutory maximum in the charges that were leveled against me or anyone that's charged federally. And so that doesn't necessarily translate into the actual time you will serve, but I'm sure it would have been quite a few years had I been convicted. And, you know, if there's time, I could kind of lay the groundwork for what you were describing.
Go ahead.
Basically, as I was mentioning about doing this 2 years of off-duty research while I still served as an IRS special agent throughout 1997 and 1998, and I basically came to the point after that 2 years where I gathered enough evidence, and again, I wasn't like creating or manufacturing, but I mean, the evidence wasn't something that I analyzed and came up with. It was more other people's analysis that I had validated as true. And so I presented the highlights of some of what I had found and accumulated to my IRS supervisors who, you know, long and short of it is, did not want to have anything to do with the information or my concerns and invited me to resign. And in fact, if I can give it out at agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com, people can go and read the background as to all that happened. But bottom line is, they showed me the door rather than address my concerns, even though I had told them, look, guys, we all took an oath to support and defend the Constitution. These are serious issues. It could mean that people's rights are being violated. But the IRS hierarchy didn't want anything to do with it. So they showed me the door, and I walked out the door. Meanwhile, from February 99, when I resigned, until November of 2004, I received a fair amount of publicity, but more on the internet and the, you know, so-called non-mainstream avenues. And there came a point when the IRS had just about enough of, you know, me believing what I believe and talking about what I talk about. And, you know, meanwhile, the IRS never, even though I made numerous inquiries with the IRS after I resigned to continue to pursue answers, sincerely, never got any audience with them. So the way the IRS and the Department of Justice work is the way they answer you is with an indictment or taking everything you own or both. And so for me, the answer was an indictment. I was indicted in November of 2004 for conspiring with one of my clients to defraud the United States of America. And they charged me, the Department of Justice charged me with 4 felony counts. One was a conspiracy count, and then 3 counts of preparing an amended federal tax returns. So there were 3 different years of tax returns, 1 count for each year, and then plus the conspiracy count. So those 4 felony charges were leveled against me. I was indicted and arrested in November of 2004. And my trial was about 7 months later in June of 2005. It was a real nasty battle. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. But as we spoke about before, it's amazing when you're put through the fire what things can happen. That was probably the time frame when my faith grew and exponentially so. Because, you know, you really are left in that situation of, you know, either I'm going to rest on the eternal power, that omnipotent power, or I'm going to try to rest on, you know, human power. And it's really, there's no choice, there's no comparison, obviously. And it was that resting on you know, God's will, and just letting things go and just doing my best and using my talents as best I could, and keeping cheerful about things and accepting the way things would pan out. But bottom line is I prepared for a 7-month period, didn't get a whole lot of, you know, my regular work done. So it was a financial burden, but I also had people from all over the country come forward with prayers, with donations, and it was really a group effort. You know, thankfully, my parents raised me, and I, you know, not that I was a perfect kid or young adult or adult, but always had that, you know, strong conscience there to do the right thing.
Well, we're going to have to stop right here for just a second, Joe. We're going to have to take a couple of commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk on Financial Survival with our guest, Joe Bannister, former IRS agent. We will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Ask. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Our guest today is Joe Bannister, former IRS agent, who has probably been the single most important tax resistance personality in perhaps my lifetime and yours. I don't think there's anyone else who's done as much ultimately to raise the issue as tax resistance as Joe Bannister, and we're going to get back to Joe in just a moment. But first, I want to remind you that we have a special for Discount Gold and Silver. The daily special is one almost uncirculated $5 Liberty. That's a gold coin, a little less than a quarter of an ounce. One MS65 silver Morgan dollar, shipping included, $645. The almost uncirculated $5 Liberty contains nearly a quarter ounce of pure gold and is a great substitution for gold bullion. The silver Morgan dollar is one of the most widely collected and studied coins ever produced by the U.S. government. It literally stands for and represents the Old West and the lore that goes along with the stagecoach delivery in small mining towns. Graded MS65, which on the 70-point scale means these coins are in full gem condition. All for $645, shipping included. Again, that's one AU $5 Liberty and one MS65 silver Morgan dollar. $645. Give Carla a call at Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Now let's get back to our guest. And Joe, you've been telling us a little about the impact you've had, that your problems with the IRS had on you and your faith. What sort of impact do you think your problems ultimately had on the Internal Revenue Service itself?
Well, I guess I appreciate what you said before, but really, I'm just kind of one of the oarsmen, you know, on the boat, at least deciding to row rather than just go along for the ride. But yeah, there's a lot of oarsmen on the boat trying to get some honesty back in income taxation.
But, you know, one thing about it is this. A lot of people have raised tax resistance issues, and most of them have been effectively, or at least in part, discredited, and they've been described essentially as lunatic fringe and don't have to pay any attention to them. You had an entirely different level of credentials from most people who resist taxes. And as a result, your tax resistance was far more credible. It was not just you are not a member of the lunatic fringe. I don't think anyone's been successful in portraying you that way, and for that reason, you've had a much greater effect than a lot of other people who were also pulling at the oars just as hard, but you've still had an extraordinary effect. Do you think the IRS, if they had it to do all over again, do you think they'd take you to court?
I don't think they would, of course. We were all, you know, all my colleagues and friends and associates, I'm sure, including yourself, were quite surprised that they would try it, because, you know, as you know, sadly, the only real way you can get your peers to judge your conduct is to be criminally charged. Every other way that the IRS takes people apart, they can pretty much do so unilaterally with hardly any oversight. I mean, the courts are very little help, if any. So, yeah, we were all very surprised that they tried it. And then, of course, when you're actually in the thick of being indicted, preparing for trial, going through the trial, and then it begins to manifest itself, not so much that they were unprepared, but how they had no case, yet they were still going to proceed forward.
Why do you think they proceeded against you? Was it a personal animosity against you, or was it because you had perhaps inspired other IRS agents to take a similar position? And then someone said, we got to slap this guy down in order to keep the rest of the IRS agents in line. You follow my point?
Yeah, I think your last point is probably the most likely. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like that old Western saying, or, you know, where this town ain't big enough for the both of us.
Yep.
In the sense that, not that I was any big deal or big fish, but look, you know, the IRS is going to know that even the average American who doesn't think much about these things is going to be able to see, well, either the IRS is right or this former IRS agent is right. Who's right? Well, the IRS says, well, he can't be right because he's sitting in jail, or he can't be right because he's been charged with a crime. And so it really was, it was a make or break for the government to do like they do so frequently. Oh, this person is discredited because they're a convict now, even though it doesn't even enter into the discussion about how they railroad people into prison routinely. It's really all about that courtroom and, you know, are you going to be wearing leg irons or not? And so it really was all hands on deck, making sure that they poured everything into this persecution of me. The problem was that I had never engaged in any illegal conduct. They were basically trying to turn a CPA who was simply going to bat for his client and being very zealous in the advocacy into a criminal conspiracy. And it was just outrageous. The allegations were outrageous, and the jury saw them as outrageous because, you know, they really thought to themselves, well, wait a second, I'd kind of like to have a CPA or an attorney zealously advocate for me, and I wouldn't want the government to turn pursuit of a refund, for example, which is what happened with my client, into some kind of criminal enterprise.
And is this what you meant by amended tax returns? They charged you with, I believe, three counts of amended tax returns. Were these amended to increase the amount of money that would be recovered from the IRS? Was that the essence of the amendment or something else?
That's right. The as you know, Alfred, the IRS has this thing called the refund method, this mechanism called the refund method, whereby they tell the public, look, you know, if you've got a beef with the income tax, don't, you know, get your beef going without having paid it first. Go ahead and pay it first and then ask for it back, and then you'll be within the parameters of, you know, proper citizenship. So what's really sickening is that that's exactly what happened. My client had filed for his whole life, filed tax returns, and decided that he was going to sue for a refund for the previous 3 years that he had filed because he still had the ability to do so. And he engaged me to help him make sure that we followed all the procedures, that we dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's. So that was what my involvement was all about. And of course, a client has to interact with the professional who's representing him. And, you know, there's going to be interaction and discussions. And the Department of Justice and the IRS tried to turn what millions of Americans do every day, seek advice from counselors, into a criminal conspiracy. And it was just so outrageous that thankfully there was a jury there to evaluate what was going on and see that this was just incredible. I mean, who could possibly, I don't know, the jury just wasn't able to swallow that my conduct, which, by the way, the government's evidence was primarily from my own work papers. During the grand jury phase of the investigation, the special agent actually subpoenaed all of my work papers. And you're probably aware, but maybe your listeners aren't, that there's, you know, Fifth Amendment protections, but as you get into work product, work papers, they're, at least for a CPA, there's more limitations placed there. So basically, we had to disclose my work papers. So, you know, the whole track record, the whole enchilada of what I did for that client was given to the government. And then they struggled. They used a lot of what I had prepared in dealing with the IRS to try to against me, like somehow I was doing these evil things by writing to the IRS agent or pointing out particular laws or procedures to the IRS agent. And, you know, the jury, it was just a non-gainer for the jury. They're like, so what's wrong with that?
Yeah. How fortunate do you think you were to have a jury that was able to understand? These are complex arguments. And to have a jury that is able to understand and appreciate, no matter what you say, you're fighting against the almighty government. The presumption on many jurors part is, well, if the government says it, it must be true. How much skill did it take in selecting the jury? How blessed do you suppose you were in getting the jury you had? Could it have gone a different way with a different jury?
It certainly could have. I mean, it really was amazing how everything came together. The way I would, you know, as far as advice to other people, you know, it's one thing to be innocent. It's another thing to communicate your innocence to a jury in a federal courtroom. And so one of the things that really went my way was to have Jeffrey Dickstein and Robert Bernhoft, who were my two defense attorneys, be there with me. And, you know, combined, they had, I don't know, 40-plus years of trial experience. So communicating my innocence to the jury was very important because, you know, I could be as innocent as the driven snow. If you don't have good defense attorneys who can make sure that gets communicated to the jury, it's like you're there in the forest yelling and no one can hear you.
I saw a video from Robert Bernhoff, if I'm saying his name correctly, but you're one of your two attorneys, where he mentioned, in fact, you were being interviewed, you and he were both being interviewed on Alex Jones. And part of the video, Mr. Bernhoff said, after the verdict, not guilty, was issued, one of the agents for the IRS, who had been at least a witness or otherwise part of the prosecution team, came over with tears in his eyes to thank your attorney for saving our boy Joe. Is that a true story?
That is a true story. His name's Sean Breslin. I don't know if he's still with the agency or not.
He might not be after if you mention his name enough.
Well, good, you know, very good guy, honorable guy. My understanding, I don't, this is kind of secondhand proof, so again, everybody has to take it with a grain of salt. But my understanding was that Sean, after he actually did the investigation, he found what I've been telling your listeners, that there was no evidence of any wrongdoing, okay? And when an investigator, an IRS or federal investigator, they do a report, and the investigator recommends prosecution or recommends that the investigation be terminated for lack of evidence. And so I've gotten some, you know, second, third-hand information that Sean actually recommended that I not be prosecuted because he couldn't find any evidence of wrongdoing. I think if he had found evidence, he would have recommended it, as, you know, as he should do. But what happened?
Which tells you this was a pure political. You were prosecuted for political purposes, not as a matter. That's at least the implication. It
right.
wasn't a question of whether you were committing crimes. You weren't committing crimes. The problem was you were politically incorrect.
Right.
And therefore, something had to be done about that.
Right. So the circumstantial evidence, as you pointed out, that after the trial and the acquittal, he was, I mean, I can only describe it as best I can. You'd have to talk to him, and he probably wouldn't talk to anybody. But, you know, tears of joy, like a release, that he wasn't happy with the fact that I was being prosecuted after he had recommended against prosecution. And again, that's the best I've been able to determine. It's not I can't say it's actually factual. It's what I believe happened. But certainly his reaction after the verdict indicated that he believed justice was done, that
yeah.
I was acquitted, and perhaps, you know, we can have some conjecture that perfect justice would have been to have not been charged at all, because that was
maybe not. As strange as that sounds, perfect justice. I mean, perfect earthly justice. I agree with that. But perfect justice from the good Lord. This was perhaps, despite all the trouble you went through and may still be facing to some degree. Despite all of that trouble, you've really had a much more profound result by going to court and being found not guilty than would ever have been the case if they had simply said, don't mess with this guy. You see,
incredibly perceptive, and not that I'm surprised. You're incredibly perceptive, and I believe how I kind of put it into a metaphor, it's almost like I was a coat of armor.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord was placing a coat of armor on me, and yet those rivets were really sticking me and hurting. And I didn't realize that what was happening was a coat of armor was being put on top of me. And that was the pain, you know. So at least for that battle, I'm not saying like I'm impervious to.
No, I get that. I understand that. But it's I really do understand. I've been through a battle or two myself, and there's nothing other than the good Lord that gets you through this stuff. It's just astonishing when you really grab onto that idea and you can feel it for yourself, not just where you hear it or you talk about it, but you've seen it, and it creates an entirely different level of reality. We're going to take a break here in about 45 seconds, but before we do, I want to remind people that one of Joe's websites is agentfortruth.com. agentfortruth.com, and it tells us what Joe is doing and where he's going to be. And on the 29th of this month, 29th of June, he will be coming to Dallas to he'll be there with former IRS agent Sherry Jackson and monetary action expert Tom Selgas to deliver a seminar dealing with the Internal Revenue Service. You can learn more about the location and time. Visit Joe's website at agent4truth.com, and you'll see it right up on the top. Former IRS agent coming to Dallas June 29th, 2013. If you're in Dallas, check it out. This is worth your time. Please attend. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. We'll take a break for a couple more commercial announcements and be right back on Financial Survival with Joe Bannister. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I want to remind you today's special, one almost uncirculated $5 Liberty coin, one MS-65 silver Morgan dollar, shipping included $645. Again, that's almost a quarter of an ounce of pure gold, plus an MS-65 Morgan dollar, and $645 shipping included. Give Carla call at 1-800-375-4188. Now we'll get back to our guest, Joe Bannister. And Joe is coming to Dallas on the 29th. Can you give us an idea of what you're going to be talking about at the seminar on the 29th?
Sure, Al. Well, basically a group called Activists for Truth, and I've got the link there on my Agent for Truth website. Mm-hmm. Going to be speaking for about an hour. As you mentioned, there's also going to be Sherry Jackson and Tom Selgus. We're hoping to get Wayne Paul. Still, as of today, don't have confirmation as to whether he'll be able to come or not. Wayne Paul is Ron Paul's brother, and Wayne is a CPA there in Texas, I think in the Houston area. Mm. So we're really trying to, you know, get the best people and the best information we can. Hope to just tell a little bit more in detail about my story, give people ideas about what they need to watch out for, how they can try to stay out of the minefield, or if they have to go through the minefield, not step on the landmines. It's a difficult process because as Big Brother gets bigger and bigger, but you know, you got to work with what you can work with, and try to impart that on the audience.
How many cases, criminal cases? I don't know how many. The number of civil cases might be very large, filed by the IRS. Certainly administrative procedures are enormous, and civil cases are probably quite substantial. But how many criminal cases are filed by the IRS each year where people are actually threatened with time in prison?
You know, I you caught me. I don't know the number, but all I can try to tell people to put it into perspective is that, you know, we have some 300 million people in the country, and there's only about 2,700 IRS special agents in the country, criminal investigators. And I, you know, frankly, you know, my judgment is some of them are really hard chargers, but a lot of them aren't. And if you factor in the, you know, 8 weeks of vacation per year, the 13 federal holidays, the absence or, you know, diminished motivation, most agents, they're lucky if they can put together one case every 2 or 3 years.
Well, that's consistent. I saw reports back probably 5 years ago is the last time I've seen a report on this, but they were filing about 1,000 criminal charges per year, according to reports I saw back 5 years ago. I don't know what the truth of the matter is today. And I was even, according to the report, typically there were an average of 3 charges per defendant, which meant there might only be 300-400 people a year who are charged criminally by the IRS. So the odds of being charged criminally are very small. On the other hand, if you're one of the chosen 400, you've got enormous problems facing you. This is no joke. These people are dangerous, as you well know.
Right. I mean, the cost, you know, as I mentioned, I don't mention the dollar amount, but we're talking a couple $100,000 of legal expenses and trial preparation expenses prior to my 2005 criminal trial. And that was in 2005 dollars. So, you know, you really have to have a little nest egg and a battle plan ready. However, you are correct that, you know, the chances of being selected, of getting into their criminal prosecution sites are really, really low. And all I can tell people is to make your stock go up for a criminal prosecution, if you're a doctor or a lawyer, or a, you know, well known in the community. I'm sure everyone's heard that, you know, Willie Nelson had his tax troubles, and Leona Helmsley, and Pete Rose, and the IRS loves publicity because then they get the biggest bang for their buck. They prosecute take all the money from a famous person. Wesley Snipes, of course, is a recent criminal target. They can scare a lot more people with just one pursuit than they can by, you know, 500 pursuits of lesser known people.
I saw a copy of a United States Assistant Attorney General newsletter back in the late 1990s, and they were interviewing an Assistant Attorney General and who was involved in selecting cases to be prosecuted by the IRS, and she flat out admitted. I mean, didn't expect that the great unwashed would see the IRS. They were just saying, yeah, we routinely select people based on their stature in the public eye for the purpose, because we know that if we get someone like, if they go after some small-time Joe Jablonski, nobody hears about it. If they go after Leona Helmsley, the message is clear. If they go after Willie Nelson, the message is clear. If they can get Willie and Leona, they can surely get you. It's a way of intimidating, and they admitted that. And they admitted that the cases are selected for political reasons rather than where are they going to get the most publicity for the buck. That was what they were looking for. And quite an amazing admission, And it's consistent with what we see here. I've got one question from our producer, and he's talking about whether you think the presumption of innocence is still real in our courts, or do we actually face a presumption of guilt merely by virtue of being charged by the government?
I think it's an excellent question, and I think, sadly, it's more a presumption of guilt. And I just have to say that from sitting in that chair of being accused. Yep. And that's why I said earlier, where you need to have someone who can communicate your innocence.
Yep.
There are, of course, the standard instructions that the jury will hear about, you know, he's innocent till proven guilty and that kind of stuff. But the actual arena and the environment doesn't fulfill that, in my opinion, or at least in my experience. So
no, I get it. I mean, I can almost hear the judge saying, reminding the jury that the defendant, that I got to tell you that the defendant is presumed innocent. We know he's actually guilty, but he's presumed innocent until found guilty. It becomes that presumption of innocence is being challenged a number of different ways. What about the tax resistance movement? Do you get the feeling that it's growing in terms of numbers? Are there more people that are challenging the IRS? And as a second question, do you think the tax resistant movement is becoming more credible? I mean, I know there's a lot of flaky arguments out there, but are we seeing more credible arguments being advanced to resist income tax?
I think the answer to your first question is, yeah, I do see it growing. I think there's at least a twofold reason. Number one, actually, the credibility factor, I think, is maybe there's more than twofold. But the credibility factor of people who are talking about the issue, the availability of information, you know, at people's fingertips on the Internet, I think is really important.
Yeah.
And now I've forgotten your second question.
Well, the first question is the movement itself growing? Are more people refusing to pay income taxes, or at least challenging their obligation? I mean, questioning their, and that, is the movement growing? And secondly, are the legal arguments advanced by tax resistors, are those arguments increasingly credible? I know there have been a lot of flaky arguments in the past and a lot of people trying to do the right thing but coming to some very unwise conclusions. Right. Are we getting better conclusions right now and a higher quality of resistance?
I think, you know, yeah, definitely growing because of the availability of credible people is available. It's there so people can go and look, and then that makes a big difference. And, of course, the availability of the Internet and just click and boom, you're there with somebody like a Tom Crier, attorney Tom Crier, truth-attack.org. Even though he's passed away, he's left a legacy of research and analysis that's very, very credible. As far as the increasing credibility of it, I think there is, but there's also, I guess for lack of a better term, the poster children, the people that are sucked into arguments and positions that are really out there to the point where they couldn't possibly get a jury, or rarely, if ever, get a jury to actually buy into their arguments and to think that they really sincerely held them. And I think the sad thing is that there's a lot of that cannon fodder, shall we say, out there. I don't want to call human beings cannon fodder, but I think they're just, you know, waiting to be run over because they've bought into some argument that some guy, you know, came through town and charged him a few thousand dollars and said, hey, do these five steps and you're free. They end up getting in a world of hurt. So I think the arguments are much more credible and available, but I think that the government, you know, likes to keep their statistics up high. The Department of Justice can go after, you know, people that talk about straw man or, you know, that kind of stuff, and they can just pick them off like ducks in a shooting gallery and keep their statistics high.
I agree with you 100%. The unfortunate thing is people think they can buy a piece of paper or copy a piece of paper and just change their name. There's the other guy's name. Put my name in, put my address in there, and I'll just say the same stuff. And then it's a get-out-of-jail-free card, just like in Monopoly, only it doesn't work that way. You right. really have to understand, if you're going to bump heads with these people, this is no game. You need to know what you're doing, point one. You can't just copy other people's work. And point two, you must be able to communicate that idea to a jury. There are a lot of good people that are sincere, and they want to fight this battle. But if they can't communicate that idea to the jury, and you talked about this a couple of times during the course of the program, how important it was to have people that could frame the argument and frame the defense in a way that could reach the jury, to communicate with the jury. If you can't do that, no matter how smart you might be, how innocent you might be, you may still come to a very unfortunate conclusion. We've got probably, what have we got left here? About 2.5 minutes, something like that, 3 minutes. What do you think, how would you like to close out, Joe?
You've mentioned that I'm coming to Dallas June 29th. Of course, looking forward to that. Had some kind of an uptick in the so-called mainstream media attention with relating to these IRS scandals. And mm-hmm. so I've linked quite a few of the recent appearances at my website, the agentfortruth.com website. So yeah, I just would encourage people to follow up, do as much studying and fact-finding as they can, do it as inexpensively as possible, and, kick the tires. And if somebody offers you a bunch of money to say, here's your get-out-of-jail-free card, you need to run and run fast away from them. This is about study, but rediscover.
It's also about liberty. In your own, on your Freedom Above Fortune website, it says, Freedom Above Fortune is an organization dedicated to the concept that no amount of real or perceived economic prosperity, fortune, is worth trading for your liberty. This isn't just a battle about whether or not we make a few bucks, whether we save a few bucks. There's a great deal more involved here, and it involves our very liberty, and that's one of the things. It involves ethics, it involves character and courage, and a lot of the qualities that you've been able to demonstrate to people over the years. You know, it would be one thing if you had just shown up and you had a little scuffle with the IRS back in 1999 and they fired you or asked you to resign. Right, that would be one thing. But you've been at this now for 14 years, and I doubt that you're doing it just because it's such a lucrative way of life.
You are correct.
I mean, this is a reflection of character, again, courage, integrity, ethics. This really is. This is an extraordinary story that you've lived. Anybody doing a book or a movie or anything like that on your story?
That America Freedom to Fascism, which of course I would encourage, if people haven't seen that movie, you can go on YouTube or freedomtofascism.com. That's a little bit of a nutshell of what I went through. Mm-hmm. And of course it deals with a lot of other people in the tax honesty movement. So encourage that, but no Joe Bannister stories yet, but,
It's something for you to look forward to. Perhaps one of these days when the heat finally dies down enough, you may write the book yourself. I want to thank you for being on the program. This is Joe Bannister, our great guest. Very proud to have you here today, Joe. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I'll be back tomorrow with Roger Sales. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Joe Bannister, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
All day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.